Hello, everybody. I'm Justin. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Justin.
As you said, I was born and raised in Madison, went to Culpeper Schools, so I was already an outsider trying to learn my way in, because my mom taught in Culpeper, and they do things a lot different there than they do in Madison. Not much country, and a lot of different types of people there. They always had their cliques and stuff. I didn't feel like I felt it. Didn't feel like I fit in at all. Being in Madison, I went to church. A lot of people in Madison seem to go to church. Maybe that's not true, but we did. At the Blue Ridge Church down on 29, when I first got confirmed there, we were allowed to drink the wine. I thought that was the blood of Christ, and I really enjoyed drinking the blood of Christ. It made my spiritual experience there all the better. The talks after communion were really good. The ones beforehand weren't so good. I didn't like them until after I had some wine. I thought I didn't like drinking. I thought that was just the blood of Christ, which found out that not too long ago. That's why when I got introduced to alcohol for the first time later on in my story, I didn't think it was a good idea. I always thought alcohol was bad, but the blood of Christ, now that's where it's at. I realize now that I might have had some alcoholic tendencies because I didn't like going to churches where they used grape juice. The wine was so much better. I also got very upset when I saw that they ran out of wine one time and they went and refilled it and you could drink more. So, because I was always trying to take a little bit of a gulp, so I thought I could get away with that. If I knew they were going to refill it, I would drink the rest of it and then tell them to go get more. But I didn't really have my first drink until I got out of high school. The wife at the time decided that wine made everything better, and I didn't believe her. I drank some wine, and it didn't make anything better. It just tasted horrible, and it wasn't the blood of Christ, so it wasn't good for you anyway. But later on, I found out that I wasn't very good at making friends or anything, and I wasn't very social either. And somebody invited me to their house party at this job I had, and when I went, I was nervous, and they said, when you're nervous, and he said, if you're going to be nervous, just bring some malt beverages and drink one of those, and you'll be fine. I didn't really believe him, but it was his house party, so I went there, and I drank one of the malt beverages, and like it says in the big book, I had arrived. They were lucky to have me. I was the life of the party. Everything was going great. And after going to a few of these things, I had to start drinking more. And I was going over the doctor's opinion today with a sponsee of mine and come to find out that I've crossed over that invisible line between where it was nice to have a drink every now and again to where I needed it. It was something that made my life better, and I didn't realize that. I thought it was just the solution to all my problems at the time. Come to find out it was also the solution to all my problems. As in, like, it created more problems. I said the same thing twice. All right. And drinking got started then. He told me that, you have to be able to drink and handle your drinking so then you can talk to those pretty ladies out there. And that was after I got my divorce with the wife. And I was like, well, okay, that makes a lot of sense. Let's do that. So I was working my way up to the serious drinking. And, drink up to the point where I had to let it all come back out and start fresh again. And then we'd go out to bars and stuff, and I just couldn't drink enough to talk to them, apparently, because it never worked out very well. And after a while, I found my drinking buddy, decided to marry her. Worked out really well. We drank about the same, so it didn't bother me or anything. And every night that something bad happened, we wake up the next day like nothing bad happened. We're just like, this is either she's blacking out or this is just the way things are supposed to be. And it kept getting more and more serious. But since we were both having the same kind of consequences, it's just really normal. And I would get kicked out. At first, we could go to bars and drink, and then we'd go back home and get doing the real drinking. Then we would go to the bars, and other people were trying to get drunk. And I would always get kicked out of the bar before I got drunk. Or the bartenders would always cut me off, which I didn't think was fair. Sometimes I'd go there to be the DD, not drink at all, and get kicked out of the bar for being sober, which that didn't make any sense to me. My friend had like 10, 15 drinks. He's fine. They serve him more. I go up and sit next to him, like, you're cut off. I'm like, I haven't even had one yet. But I didn't need any, I guess. I had a bunch of, I forget what it's called, that wine liquor. You know, it doesn't really matter. But on the way to the strip club, I had 3 or 4 of those and figured I'd sober up on the way, you know, hang out with my friends because you spend all night there spending all the money you have. And by the end of the night, I'd be sober. But maybe she kicked me out because I was still buzzing off of those. I didn't think about that till now. But so this wife and I, the drinking buddy, things kept getting worse and worse. We would play wine beer pong because that was a great idea. It's a lot better than, tastes better than beer. Never really liked beer. Liquor is more my thing. Get there quicker. But that turned out to be really horrible. You know, we usually drink a box of wine a night between the two of us, or sometimes 2 boxes, depending on how much we needed to get to feel okay again. But beer pong was a little too quick. We had a pretty big mess to clean up the next day. And we had a lot of fights over who was the problem drinker after a while as well. That night was probably my fault. But I also like to point out how alcoholic everybody else was there for a little period. Friends of mine came over. They were drinking shots. They were playing beer pong shots. I thought that was a great idea, but wanted to test it out on them first. So I stuck with beer, saw how crazy they got, and they seemed to be having a lot of fun. We tried that the next night, and that didn't go over very well at all. I ended up sleeping on the back porch because something really bad happened. Never got the full story of that one, but I'm pretty sure it wasn't good. At that point, we weren't really allowed to go out in town and drink anymore. So if we went out in town, we'd just hang out with our friends until we had to come back. And there was a couple nights where we both get really hammered. And this is the time period where we weren't allowed to drink in public, too, which is kind of funny. But we both get really hammered, and I ended up carrying her back inside the house. And this was just a normal way of living. Apparently, people that can handle or drink like a normal person don't have to deal with that. But it got to the point where I drink her under the table, put her to bed, and do some real drinking. I didn't think I was hiding anything from her because she was there the whole time. And she'd wake up the next day, wonder where all the liquor went, and be like, you really had some fun last night, because she passed out. How does she know? And we decided that the first wife I had 2 kids with, and she decided that I was going to have to get my kids back. I'm a big-time people person. If somebody tells me what to do, I usually try to get it done. So during the whole fighting for custody of my kids, you know, drinking was going a bit crazy and everything, but we were able to convince everybody that the other parent was the worst parent. And this was like after a 5-year crazy court case, too. They're never short, apparently. But by the end of it, the guardian litem and everybody was decided that I was going to get the kids. And which is pretty impressive for somebody that drinks every weekend. And has the cops called on them every once in a while just to see why there's so much noise going on and if everybody's okay. But to celebrate, we got drunk on the James River, which is a really bad idea when you have a kid involved. Doesn't look too good getting wasted at the, you know, James River and then being taxied to the room for the night by a police officer. You know, they don't look too kindly on 2 grown-ups abandoning a child because they're too drunk to be around the child and having to go to jail over it. And it was like, that's okay. The ex won't find out about that. That was always all the way at the James River. Well, news moves fast. Once she found out about that, it wasn't I'm winning the custody battle anymore. It's how much time am I going to allow to have with the kids. And after that point, I decided I didn't want to drink anymore. Wife got in trouble for some other things while we were there, and so she was going to have to go to jail over that. And the lawyer told me that ditch the wife and you have a chance. Of course, without her, I can't afford to live anywhere because I don't spend my money very wisely. And or pick her and just don't have the kids as much or at all. And so I picked her and not had the kids very often. And at that point, I decided, after all, I started drinking when I was 21, and I stopped drinking when I was 29. It didn't take me very long to get to a spot where I was willing to try something different. I'm a big-time believer in pyramid schemes, and that's what I thought AA was when I first got here. figured you guys were trying to sell me something, and I was willing to give it a try the first time. But I got pretty desperate after I decided I didn't want to drink anymore. So I stopped. And different like all the other times I decided to stop drinking, she wasn't there to encourage me to start up again. She didn't like me when I wasn't drinking because I was boring and I was angry all the time. And this time I was boring and angry all the time by myself since she was in jail. And I decided to get 3 jobs because I lost my other one because they didn't want me there anymore. Because I was angry and not fun to be around. And apparently if you talk bad to your boss, they fire you. And so I decided to get 3 jobs to try to make up the salary I had there. And you don't really have a lot of time to sleep or think when you're doing 3 jobs. And I was part of the thing that I think kept me sober was being a taxi driver for people drinking. I didn't really see the bad side of drinking because I was usually the worst one drinking. That's what I figured. Because when I saw those drunk people get in the car and how bad they were and how they were just throwing up all over the place, I was like, is that what it's like when people get drunk? And then there'd be the people that get in there, didn't seem like they had one drink, having a good conversation, just seemed quite normal. And these were like UVA kids. So I was looking up to these people because I thought they were going to run everything when they got out of school because they're the smart kids. Not so smart when they drink sometimes. But it helped keep me sober because I was like, if the smart kids are drinking that way, I can't imagine what I was drinking like when I was out there. And I haven't heard of them getting kicked out of any bars yet. And so that kept me sober for a little while. Wife got out of jail. She said, we're going to church. We're going to stop. We're never going to drink again. And all this other wonderful stuff. And I was like, all right, this sounds great. Because, you know, my exes are always my higher power. And they don't do a very good job of running either one of our lives, apparently. But so after 2 weeks, she was back to drinking. And I just I couldn't believe it. I was like, what happened to all that talk about staying sober and everything? And, you know, I couldn't take it. I had to stay sober because I don't want to lose my kids, you know, all the way. And if I stay around her, I'm going to drink again because I have to be on the same level as she is. So we're fighting because I don't want her to drink, so I have to start drinking. And luckily she was drinking outside the house. If it was inside the house, I don't think I could have done it. But so we go to a counselor, and I like going to counselors because last time I went to a counselor with a wife of mine, she would get on my wife, and I'd be sitting there going, yeah, tell her how wrong she is. She's the one screwing up everything. It's not me. Well, I was the first one to stop seeing that counselor the first time for whatever reason. And then the second time, I was ready for that. I was like, yeah, you tell her how wrong she's being so then she can step up so then we can have a good relationship again. And then she said, you're both alcoholics. I didn't say anything. How can you accuse me of being an alcoholic when she's the one talking? I was like, no. I've been sober for almost a year. You can't tell me I'm an alcoholic. Well, I didn't have any time to drink. I was working 3 jobs and sleeping like 3-4 hours a night. And I didn't realize you can drink and drive while you're on the job or anything like that. I got to learn all that fun stuff from you guys. Very upset about that when I got here. I thought I missed out on a lot. But so then I told her that. She says, well, you're a dry drunk. And I didn't know what that meant, but it really pissed me off. And I had to prove her wrong. So I was like, all right, well, how do I prove to you I'm not a dry drunk? She smiled because she knew she had me. I didn't know it until afterwards. But she said, go to 90 meetings in 90 days. I said, go to what? She said, go to AA. I was like, what's AA? She said, Alcoholics Anonymous. So I ended up going to one meeting, and everybody in the room said they were an alcoholic. I thought they were a bunch of liars. I claimed to be an alcoholic when I wanted to do some serious drinking. So then the warning was already out there. I drink like an alcoholic. You stay. It's your fault for whatever happens next. That's how I got a lot of the scrapes and justified my drinking. And they all claimed to be an alcoholic, but they were smiling. They seemed happy. And they weren't drinking. The only time I felt okay after I crossed that invisible line was when I was drinking. And I was miserable for almost a year. That little thing in my stomach tightening and tightening. And they were just happy and free. Another thing alcohol did for me was it caged me. It seemed to make my life smaller and smaller and smaller the more I drank. And I didn't know how small my life was getting until I came here. You guys wanted me to go out and do things. Now, my doing things was at home drinking or getting enough sleep to go work the next day. You guys wanted me to say hi to people and all this other stuff. Well, that comes later, I guess. Let me get sober first. Really sober. Apparently, she called me a dry drunk because I was so miserable. So when I came to the first meeting, I saw that you guys had this thing that, whatever it was, you guys were happy about it and talking and having a good old time. And then I come back to the psychiatrist and be like, they're not alcoholics. They are happy and they're sober. So they obviously are not the same kind of person I am. And then she kept telling me to go back and actually listen to what you guys were saying. I didn't realize I had to do that. I thought I was supposed to just sit in the chair and not fall asleep for a while. And I started to come back and hearing what you guys were saying. You said you had 12 steps that taught, I heard anyway, that you guys had 12 steps that taught you how to live life. And I've been looking for a way to live life properly my entire life. My dad didn't really seem to know how to do it. My mom didn't really seem to know how to do it. These higher powers definitely didn't do a very good job. I ended up losing a lot of money trying to please those higher powers. And you guys said that, I was like, they have these 12 steps and it will change your life. And she's like, oh, that sounds really good. I guess you should get a sponsor. I was like, what's a sponsor? Look for somebody that has what you want. I was like, well, I could pick anybody then. What about that woman I told you about? She's like, no, has to be a guy. She's like, why don't you go for a father figure since you talk bad about your father a lot? And I did. I picked one of the oldest guys in the room. And he all he did was post up in the back corner of the room and seemed like he knew what he was doing. And he was scary. I just couldn't believe it. It was like really weird. I have a hard time asking girls out. You want me to go ask a guy out? And I was determined. I was determined to change my life, and if this was what it took, that's what I would do. So I went over there, waited for like 5 minutes, like I do sometimes when people are talking, just wait for my turn. And he just kept talking and ignoring me. So I got sick and tired of it. I poked him on the shoulder. He turned around and said, what? And I walked away. Came back that same night, though, and went up to him like, will you be my sponsor? He glared at me. It was probably his normal face, but, you know, I'm sensitive, so I thought he was glaring at me. And he told me to meet him outside. And I didn't give you guys a very good picture of my first meeting. My first meeting was pretty full like this one, and I was sitting in the back with sweatpants, wife beater, two energy drinks on the table next to me, pack of Black and Milds in my pocket, and a lighter. And that's how I went up to this guy with my energy drink in hand. Will you be my sponsor? And then he said, I'll meet you outside and then we'll talk. I was like, well, I think I just got rejected. But I waited out there just in case things changed. And as I was standing there smoking my Black and Mild, telling myself how stupid I was for asking a guy to be my sponsor and being rejected by, you know, women's tough. Being rejected by women is tough, but being rejected by a guy, you don't even, that was just weird. But so I'm sitting there smoking my Black and Mild, and mid-puff, he comes out there and just slams open the door, all traumatic. This is probably way different. He probably opened it gently and everything, but for me, it was just a life-changing event. It has to be dramatic. So he slams open the door and, you know, puffs up, and he looked a lot bigger that when he did that. And he's just like, I believe in God. If that's going to be a problem, I can't sponsor you. And I go, whatever. Your God's good enough for me. What do we have to do now? And we started doing the steps. He didn't help me at all. He told me to do all the work. I had to read the first couple chapters in the big book, the first chapter in the 12 and 12. And then he asked me what they said. I was like, what's your job? I'm supposed to help you get through the big book. Well, aren't you going to tell me anything about it? No. You're going to tell me about it. And then if you get things wrong, we'll talk about it. So I studied pretty well because I didn't want to be wrong. I'm very sensitive again. If I'm not right, then I'm the worst person in the world. And we got to the steps. First, I had to decide, had to prove to him that my life was unmanageable and that I was powerless over alcohol. I was like, this is bullcrap. I came to this meeting on a losing streak. I'm in a wife beater and, you know, sweatpants smoking Black and Milds. How much of a loser do you need me to prove? And then step two, he said, if I wanted a higher power, why don't you describe your higher power and then we'll go over it. I didn't realize that any answer was okay. So I was going for the most loving, kind, and somewhat forceful higher power because I wanted to impress the guy. He didn't care. I wasn't even done telling him how wonderful my higher power was when he said, okay, that will work. And then step three, he told me to memorize the third step prayer, and we will say it together. And I didn't, like any good alcoholic, you do your homework on the last day. So I, during the meeting before we were supposed to meet, I memorized the third step prayer. And we said the third step prayer, and something changed. I didn't even know what it meant. I learned how to read and stuff and understand what I was reading in AA. He keeps me making me read these books. You know, he doesn't like it when I watch TV or videos to try to learn something. He's like, why don't you read about it? And, you know, I started to be able to suit up and show up a little bit. And he was very patient with me. If I didn't show up that day or whatever, he didn't yell and scream at me. But he'd ask me where I was doing. I didn't like answering those questions. And he told me to call him every day. And every day I didn't call him, I felt like crap. But every day I did call him, I felt pretty good. Even though he was telling me how wrong I was and that I could improve my life by doing something different. And then step four is just crazy. I'm supposed to fearlessly face my inventory. You guys know the steps. They're over here somewhere. There you go. And I didn't know what that meant. But I read it in the big book, read it in the 12 and 12, and I did my best. I wrote down the people I was angry at. That was the fun part. Then I wrote why I was angry at them. That was pretty long stuff, too. I was told you're only allowed one or two sentences per person. I didn't like that because they did a lot more wrong to me than that. But then I had to figure out what was my, you know, what did it affect? Now, that took forever because all I really thought I was just pissed off at these people. I didn't think you need to know much more than that. They wronged me. Let's talk about them. And then I started to figure out that I had these natural instincts. And I didn't know I had natural instincts. I thought I was way different from everybody else. They got the manual of the life. I didn't. Heard that a lot in meetings. Apparently I'm not the only one. But figured out what it affected. Then I figured out what my part was. That took the sponsor because I couldn't see it. I was always the victim in my stories. And then after that, he started telling me what I could have done better. We didn't actually write it out, but we started talking about it. And then he had me read step six. We didn't really go over it too much. Sometimes I don't know how to count. After four comes five. For step five, we basically did that at the same time when we went over the fourth step, which I didn't realize I was doing step five at the moment. And after every step, he always asked me this crazy question. Is this everything? Have you left anything out? I'm not trying to be fired from a sponsee, so I'm trying to tell you everything I got. But he kept asking that same question over and over again. So the beginning of step five was the interesting part. He would point out all my character defects. And I didn't know what these words were. I just write them down. And I was too scared to ask him too many questions because he'd ask a question back. He didn't like it when he had to explain things. And he's a really patient man, apparently. He rolls his eyes in the back of his head, takes a deep breath, and says, God grant me serenity. I didn't realize that was him being impatient. I thought that was just him asking God for giving me advice. And apparently this is one of the same. But after the defects of character were coming, I really wanted to hit that man. I didn't quite understand why, but the more he told me that was wrong with me, I thought I only had a couple things wrong. It was like two pages. And I couldn't believe that all these things that were wrong with me. And the last night we were almost done. I was leaving, and the drinking buddy called me up, and she's like, what are you doing? I'm doing the AA thing again. AA's stupid. I don't like it either, but whatever. It's just 12 steps. How long can it take? A year. But she's like, what are you doing? I'm going over my character defects. What are those? Apparently there's something wrong with my character that we have to talk about every time we go, and then in the next step I get to be relieved of some of them. She's like, what are some? Well, apparently I'm selfish. I'm dishonest. I only seek to get stuff for me. And she's like, that's just stupid. Why would you do that? And I start defending it. Well, these character defects are going to change my life, and maybe you should try them for yourself. I'm going, just 2 minutes ago, you wanted to punch your sponsor for doing this, and now you're telling her why these things are so wonderful. Didn't make a lot of sense to me. But once we got all those down, he asked me that same silly question again. Did you leave anything out? And when I did my fourth step, I forgot this part. There was that one thing that I didn't want anybody to know. because I was sure he was going to fire me after this. I'm sure he could put up with a lot of crap. He's dealt with a lot of drunks, but that one thing he's going to fire me for. So I tried it out on somebody else. So if they didn't get disgusted, maybe he'd be okay with it too. I told the other person, he told me something far worse. I was like, okay, I can't wait to tell my sponsor this. I want to know what his deepest, darkest secret is. Not only did he not flinch, he didn't tell me any stories. I was very disappointed. He told me a lot of his stories during the other part, but this last one, I was like, this one's really bad. You're gonna cringe when you hear about this one. Nothing. And it was really nice to be able to get all that off my chest and it not be a big deal. But at the same time, I wanted to be special enough to actually, you know, affect him a little bit. Oh, you were a sick alcoholic. What I was really hoping for, but apparently I'm just an average drunk, which is a blessing, I guess. Nothing special about me. But so we made it all the way to step. We did six, where I was trying to be prepared to get rid of my defects of character. Thought that was a wasted step at first. Come to find out that it's very important. I pray for that one quite a bit these days. But then we went to step seven, did the seven-step prayer. Then we started working on eight and made a list of people I owed amends to. Now, that was really scary. I realized I hurt these people, but I don't want to apologize to them, you know, tell them I was sorry for hurting you. That's never worked before. Apparently, that's not how that works. But he said, let's get through the step first. Let's figure out who you owe amends to and why, and then we'll come up with some scripts for some people. And once you finish that, it was step nine. Start working on making amends to these people. And apparently, which I didn't realize, making amends to people is not saying I'm sorry. For me, for what I was told, it's telling them I was wrong. I hurt you, and this is how. How can I make this even? I did not like this at all. But I was willing to do it. I wanted to stay sober. And I started doing it, and people started liking me. And something about me, first two people I did it or whatever, I was ready for the consequence of whatever they wanted me to do. It was usually simple stuff, which really pissed me off because I like feeling special. I wanted you to give me some drastic, over-the-top thing to have to do so that I knew how much I affected you. They just wanted me to show up. They just wanted me to recognize that I hurt them. And then some of these people wanted me to become their friend. I was like, why don't I just do something to make you resentful again so then we don't have to talk anymore. But I didn't like making amends, so I just dealt with it. One guy wanted me to go to meetings with him and just talk to him about the big book. That worked out for a little while, but I kind of let that wean off a little bit. He kept asking me for money for the basket, and I'm trying to keep as much as I can at the time. But also, I got a job at this straw factory. I complain about it a lot in Charlottesville. But actually here too, New Staples a little bit. But stuff started changing there. Instead of me being one of the worst workers, I started to be one of the average workers. I was just there to work instead of trying to get what I could get. Then they started giving me all these responsibilities and I was able to give presentations, be a part of all these crazy teams they like to do and stuff, and it sucked. I really hated it. But my sponsor kept telling me, whatever they tell you to do, do your best. And when you're wrong, admit it. And it works. It works so well that later on in life, I decided to move on to another company. They called me back. And I'm working there right now in the office. Still think I'm going to get fired sometime soon when they figure out I'm not worth anything, but they haven't yet. And they're still asking me to do more stuff. And it's just crazy that a guy like me, sweatpants, wife beater, black and mild, can get an office job, no college, but can get an office job at a place like that. Whether or not the job will work out, I don't really know. I'm very fearful, so I feel like I will lose the job, but it doesn't really matter. That shouldn't have happened in the first place. They gave me a salary that's way beyond what I deserve, as far as I can tell. And, all because I was listening to a sponsor that didn't know didn't understand the problems I was telling him. Every time I complained about something, he's like, well, do this. But you don't understand. This person really hurt my feelings. This person is wrong. Just do this. And things got better. And after a while of being here, I came to find out that this is not a thinking program, it's an action program. Well, I don't really practice action as much as I practice thinking. So that's still quite a difficult concept for me. And but it's a really big relief that, because I'm also a recluse. I do not like public speaking. I do not like putting my hand out. And I don't like talking to people. But my sponsor told me the best way to get a sponsee is by talking to people. The main reason I had to go through the steps in the first place was so that I could be useful to another alcoholic. And get a sponsee. Life will change real quick. I had a couple sponsees run me through the ringer. But I stayed sober. One of them didn't. The other one's just as crazy as ever. I love calling that guy. His life is staying the same. Mine keeps getting bigger and better, and his is staying the same. And he's not drinking. So the only difference it seems to be is that he's not doing the steps, the only thing I can figure. Because I don't really feel like I'm doing too good. I just stay busy. I try to do the next right thing. I always try to say yes to AA. And AA never stops requesting things. AA keeps me busier than I want to be. But I don't have time to drink. I don't really have time to think about me too much. And, AA's given me a lot of freedom. My life is completely different. It's only been 4 years. I used to have to drink alone and try to get people to come hang out with me. And the only way to do that is if I gave them alcohol or, that's all I really had to offer, actually. I don't really have food at the house. It's mostly alcohol. But, and even then they wouldn't want to come around me. And I started doing the steps in AA. They start making me dress better, too. That was really, I didn't like that at all. He's like, you need to wear something other than sweatpants. Stop wearing wife beaters to meetings. Wear a T-shirt. And he started explaining simple things like, when you tell your daughters you're going to be somewhere, be there. If you tell your daughters you're going to do something, do it. And I failed a lot at that. And all it really did was help me tell him, look, I was wrong. I'm going to try and do better next time. How can I make this up to you? And I wasn't allowed to give him ice cream or money. I had to make it up some other way. So playing Barbie dolls, get my fingers painted, all punishment for not showing up and doing what I said I'm going to do. And the funny thing was, as weird as that was for me sober, it used to feel the painted fingernails thing wasn't that different from when I get blacked out and people were having fun with me. At least my daughters didn't put penises all over my face. But, back to making amends to people. One amends hit me pretty hard. It was my first wife. I told her my part of the story where I was wrong. Then you're supposed to ask, what did I do to harm you that I didn't mention already? I didn't bring a paper and pen, but it was a laundry list of stuff. And then came the hard part. The woman that asks me for money all the time on top of child support, when I asked her, what could I do to make this right? She just said, help me take care of our kids. I was like, what happened to the blood-sucking vampire that I'm used to dealing with? That's all she wanted. And then I'm like, okay, I thought that was my job anyway, but good deal. I can do that. Thank you for listening to me. I really appreciate it. And I start driving away, and like tears are coming up to my eyes, and I'm going, this doesn't seem to make any sense. That can't have been the same woman. Then she calls me. I'm like, oh, here it comes. Now she's going to want that extra car or whatever she wants this time. I answer the phone. She's crying. She says, I owe you amends as well. I'm very sorry for how I treated you. I feel like I was just as wrong as you were. It doesn't make any sense to a guy like me. If you hurt me, I have to hurt you twice. And apparently if you don't live that way, not as many people hate you anymore. I learned that through here. And I told her, that's fine. As far as I'm concerned, we're even. Let's just worry about the kids. And our relationship from then on was, or at least this is what I was told I was allowed to do. You're only allowed to talk to her about the kids. She starts screaming and yelling at you, tell her you have something better to do, you're going to go do it. Hang up the phone. And if she wants to talk about the kids and stay on topic. Other than that, you don't disrespect her. You listen to her complaints, and if she's right about anything, you take a deep breath, tell her she's right, and then you have to go before you start cursing at her. And then every time you have a problem, just give me a call. I probably owe my sponsor a couple months worth of phone bills. I call him all the time because my life is not manageable by me. But he made time to answer the phone and tell me how things are supposed to be. I wish I could remember all the simple things that were epiphanies to me when I came in here. Like the whole not wearing sweatpants to meetings thing. That honestly was an epiphany to me. I'm not a guy that likes suits at all. I was told to get a suit. I actually got this suit for a job interview that I didn't get. And it was such a nice suit, I decided to wear it here. But, what were the other things? The whole being nice to people, only worrying about my side of the street, that set of rules and guidelines really opened up a lot of venues in my life. Not arguing with my supervisor about how stupid she was being, novelty idea. Because she was always wrong. She just needed me to tell her, is what I thought. Come to find out that she's allowed to be wrong. That I do what she says regardless, because that's what they pay me to do. I thought my job was to run the whole show. It talks about me a lot in this big book. But also the part that was really important to me in the big book nowadays, since I read it a lot, was the part where after the third step, if I do what my higher power says to the best of my ability, I get a life of comfort, ease, and serenity. Now, if you're anything like me, you had to look all those words up because I didn't know what they meant. That's another thing my sponsor told me to do. When you read the big book, underline each word you don't know and look it up in something called a dictionary. I thought Google was the only thing that you use to define things, but apparently there's this thing called a dictionary that you use to look up words you don't understand. And I come to find out that learning words broadened my vocabulary. Got to the point where I was able to talk to my supervisor over her head, which is so much fun. Oh, you don't know what that means? I know what that means. I had to look it up. Of course, I was told I'm not allowed to do that anymore once I told my sponsor. He said, talk to her in a way that she can understand. At first, it started off as me having to dumb down my language so that she could understand. Then it came to be me trying to talk to her in a way that made sense to both of us. And you guys taught me how to love people how they actually are instead of who I want them to be, which apparently is a big freeing thing. If I have to wait for everybody in my life to stop being sick so then I can be healthy, I'm going to stay sick. But if I can love the sick people as they are being sick, not only can I live my life as a, more free, I can then help them by telling them what I did to go through it. My mom loves getting advice from me now. Before, she hated it. And then I'm told I'm not allowed to give her advice anymore. So I don't know what to do with all that talk she's giving me now. I was really planning on fixing her, but it's not my job. I apparently have a full-time job working on Justin. It gets really boring and really exciting when I decide to take my will back. And apparently my will is my thinking, and then my life are my actions. Which was really weird at first. I like to listen to, I think it's Joe and Charlie, Big Book Study. And they broke it down so that a complicated alcoholic like me can understand the simplicity of this program. They use a lot of big and eloquent words in this big book. And when they say things, they mean it. And I'm only supposed to read the black words. So I have to go through it quite a few times to get to the point where I actually read what's in here instead of think my way into a problem that doesn't exist. The first thing my sponsor usually says when I call on the phone these days, what problem have you made today? And how are we going to make it simple? I haven't said anything yet. I don't think it's very nice of him to say that I have feelings. But it gets us to the point of where I'm my biggest problem today. And that's a huge relief considering that it used to be everybody else was my problem. And, one of my daughters and I have philosophical conversations all the time. And she actually listens to what I have to say, and I get the opportunity to listen to what she has to say. Before, I wasn't listening to talk to you guys about how you were feeling. I was listening so I could tell you how you were wrong. Apparently, that's not how you build friendships. But the life that I get to live is amazing. The conversations, I only got to see my daughter one day this weekend. But we spent time together this entire weekend. And that's not something I can say a lot. I'm still practicing that. Apparently when you have your kids over, they're not just ornaments you put on the wall and just deal with them when you have to deal with them. You're supposed to spend time with them. And apparently it's free. It doesn't cost you any money to spend time with your kids. Sponsor had to tell me that one. I thought they were just there, so then you were doing your job. You gave them food, tell them to go to bed, and you're done. But apparently you're supposed to feed them, talk to them, and nurture them. And my daughter allows me the opportunity to listen to her life, identify with a lot of problems she's going through. I have a feeling that this job I currently have is so that I can identify with her for her going to school. Apparently we have the same problem. We both want to control whatever situation we're in to the point where we both get headaches and freak out a little bit and want to control things more when we freak out. And apparently the solution is to let go and let God. And God doesn't have to be a being of ultimate, authority. It can just be good, orderly direction. But for a complicated alcoholic like me, good, orderly direction is ask the sponsor whether this is a good idea or not, and then proceed to see if it works. Because he taught me good, orderly direction. I thought good, orderly direction was getting as much as I could, as fast as I could. Usually that was liquor. And I don't know. Being up here and standing in front of this room instead of being in the back over there in the sweatpants listening to somebody's life change is a big difference to me. This is a wonderful opportunity to try and be of service to people that were of service to me. I wouldn't do this for anybody else, even at work. I would not. They can't pay me to be in front of this many people and say stuff. I don't care. But this is worthwhile, and it's really nice to be in front of you guys in a suit. I'm very nervous and uncomfortable in these things. I'm a drunk. I'm comfortable in sweatpants, liquor and Black and Milds, or energy drinks. And I don't even drink that much energy drink anymore. I quit smoking Black and Milds, and it saves a lot of money. If I don't have to buy energy drinks and Black and Milds, I get to save a little bit of money. I used to spend a lot of money on that too. But I still broke. I don't understand how you get to the point where you're not broke anymore. I used to spend over $500 a month on liquor. And that's not including the bags of chips and dip that always go with drinking. And now I don't drink anymore, saving $500 a month, but I'm broke. I have a nice car, I guess, but I have some nice clothes. It was really weird to go shopping with a guy for clothes. It's one of the weirdest things I ever did in my life. I didn't shop for clothes ever since high school. And I was out of high school for at least 10 years before I shopped for clothes. It was really nice to wear new things. And I only have that opportunity because of this program and the simple 12 steps that I have explained to me constantly. And then reading the instruction manual called Alcoholics Anonymous. Apparently there's this chapter called Into Action that tells me how to live my daily life. And that pisses me off because I know how to run the show, to run into the ground, but it doesn't feel that way at the beginning. My great ideas are wonderful. So I tell them to a sponsor, and then they get changed a lot. But, praying every night and looking over my day and seeing what I did wrong and can improve the next day is a novelty idea. Usually, those are things that used to be things that would beat myself up over. If I screwed up anything, I would beat myself up about it. Now it's just a growing opportunity. And it's nice to change that. I'm not a horrible person anymore. I'm just a flawed person that gets to work towards ideals. I didn't realize ideals were things you grow towards. I thought they were things you had to get the first try, or you failed and you just quit doing it. And it's nice to have people to call every day to tell my crazy problems to. I got to go to work and work at work and then get paid for the day. But that's not what I tell them. I went to work. My boss told me I had to do work. My trainer was telling me I was doing the work wrong, and I didn't yell at her, but I wait till the end of the day. I yell at other people about how work goes sometimes. And then he just tells me the simple thing over and over again. Did you work at work? Yes. Did you get fired? No. Are they going to pay you? Yes. Then what are you complaining about? I guess nothing. I'm just having a great day and don't know how to appreciate it. And they make me do gratitude. No, they don't make me. I get to do gratitude lists every day. And apparently if you do 10 gratitudes in the morning, or if I do 10 gratitudes in the morning and 10 gratitudes at night, My day starts off on a good foot. My day ends on a good foot. There's a lot of crazy in between, but those two parts of the day are pretty important. And I can sleep tonight. I used to have to drink to pass out. And apparently that's not sleeping, so I didn't get a lot of sleep until I became sober. And not outside of the rooms either. I didn't sleep much when I had three jobs. And first year of sobriety, I had a lot of work and I didn't get much sleep. But after like the second year, it took me a while to realize it, but I was able to sleep again, which is a novelty idea for a guy like me. And I'm also single. I didn't know you could be single and stay sober at the same time. I thought I always had to have a living higher power to tell me what to do. And apparently, you know, I don't. That was crazy for me. But I think I talked enough, but, huh? Oh, it's good? Okay, good. Thank you guys for letting me speak today.
Yeah, thank you.